As we record this interview, it's mid-May in Los Angeles, where I'm located. It's a blisteringly hot day. We're supposed to hit 100 here. The bougainvillea outside my window is in magnificent full bloom, and MCAS opens in less than 3 weeks. For rising college seniors, I hope you have MCAT scores you are happy with. But if you don't, you may be considering a retake in the MCAT prep course. Rising college juniors are probably starting to think, or perhaps planning to enroll, already enrolled in a course this summer so that they can ace the MCAT well before next year's application cycle, not to mention the new MCAT 2015. We're going to explore different options for MCAT prep and the implications of MCAT 2015 in just a few minutes with the co-founder of an online MCAT prep company. Hello, I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. Welcome to Admission Straight Talk. Before I introduce our special guest, I would like to acquaint you with a few free resources at Accepted that help applicants get accepted to medical school. First, create a compelling MCAS application. The name of this on-demand recorded webinar pretty much says it all, but I'll give you a couple of details. It has advice on tackling the personal statement of the MCAS, and it provides an approach to making the most of the activities and most meaningful experiences sections on the MCAS. A second chance at medical school, the A to Z of applying to post-bac programs, is a free downloadable report with advice for getting into post-bac programs. And finally, medical school reapplicant advice, 6 Tips for Success. The name says it all. This, too, is a free downloadable report for med school reapplicants. So whether you prefer to watch or to read, are a first-time applicant or a reapplicant, we have something that can help you get into medical school. I'll include links in the show notes at info.accepted.com/56. We'll also link from there to any other resources mentioned in this show. You can check out these resources at the end when I will again give you the show notes location. Now, back to the MCAT and our guest today. The MCAT is one of the most grueling graduate aptitude exams out there, if not the most grueling, and it's about to get harder. Today, I've asked Alec Lee, co-founder of MPrep, to join me so you and I can learn more about his company's entirely online approach to MCAT prep. Alec graduated from the University of British Columbia in 2011 with a BS in biotechnology and a minor in philosophy. He also spent 2 months in Kenya with Kenya Ceramic Products in 2010. He writes about himself. With a strong business and life sciences background, I'm passionate about ventures in biotech, healthcare, and education. He seems to have successfully united those passions when he co-founded MPrep. Alec, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Now, before we get to MCAT prep and the real purpose of today's interview, can you talk for a minute about Kenya Ceramic Products and how you found yourself in Kenya?
Yeah, so KCP is an organization that was founded out of Alberta by a series of medical students, actually, who wanted to apply a water filtration technology they came across from an organization called Potters for Peace. So the technology is this ceramic water filter that looks a lot like a flower pot. It's kind of big, maybe about a foot across. It's porous, it's low-tech, it's cheap and portable, and so we wanted to set up a sustainable operation by Kenyans for Kenyans. You know, it's run by the locals over there. And we wanted that to be able to deliver on its vision of clean water without requiring charitable input. So we wanted to have a self-sustaining operation. And that was a mission that I could get behind as an entrepreneur,
sure,
for someone for whom social missions are important. So I found myself there because I had a pretty grueling 4 years of school. I had another year ahead of me. I had 7 classes per semester. I was in class or in lab 40 hours a week, and I just needed a break. And being in Vancouver in 2010 were the Winter Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to take some time to do some work with the Olympics, and after that I went to Kenya, and then I came back for the summer to continue working on my degree. So that's how I ended up over there.
Is the Kenya Ceramic Product still in existence? Is it still working?
Yeah, at the time I was there very early on, right when they were starting to learn how to mass produce consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So they were having some production issues, and I was there helping them get the factory up and running properly. Now they have a consistent model, and they are selling them. They sell for about $13 each, which is a lot for the locals.
Yeah.
But you know, it's sold from the perspective of decreasing absenteeism in the family. So they make their money back by reducing waterborne illness.
Sure.
And of course, there's the side benefit of the fact that the family is healthy, the children don't get sick as often, and there are other benefits besides monetary ones for the family. And so, yeah, they are selling them, and they're doing quite well, it seems.
That's great. Now, obviously, you have interests. I mean, again, the quote I gave, that you have a strong business and life sciences background, and you're passionate about ventures in biotech, healthcare, and education. How did you come to found MPREP, and when did you found it?
So the idea was conceived, and we started working on it in 2007. And it's with an old friend of mine from middle school. We co-founded it together. We then launched it in 2008. And the story behind that is that we were both pre-meds, and back then there weren't any resources that really incentivized us to study daily. You know, basically the only thing you could do at the time was get textbooks and get courses. And so the downside of textbooks is that they often lead people, and they led us usually, to procrastinate and then just cram. and we didn't want that, right? It was still early on in our undergraduate career. We, at the time, for me as well, med school was in our future, and we knew that this was going to be an arduous exam. We wanted to start preparing for it early, but books are just not that much fun.
Right.
And courses were $2,000. So
right.
That didn't work for us either. And so we decided to launch something really simple, just like a question of the day, something to keep us motivated to think about the material, to work on it, and hopefully keep others motivated as well. And for a long time, that was all we did for about 3 years. And as we built up this user base, we realized that students really liked our content and they wanted more from us. So that's when we started developing the course, which launched in 2011. We developed a QBank, which is a database of practice passages, and that was a relatively recent product as well.
Okay. Now we're going to get to the different things that MPREP offers, services that MPREP offers, in just a second, but what is distinctive about MPREP's approach to MCAT study and MCAT preparation? All right, so you've done away with textbooks, but besides that?
Right. So, I think that depends a lot on the product. You know, the approaches for the products are different.
All right. Maybe we should discuss the products first, right? You can talk about the approach and the product together. I understand you have the live e-course, the recorded e-course, and the QBank, right?
Right. Aside from the question of the day.
Aside from the question of the day, right.
Question of the day, of course, is really straightforward. It's free. Students can come. They can sign up. They don't have to create an account. They don't have to get it to the email address, but they can. And that's something that we want to keep pure, like we did when we founded it. It'll always be free, and it'll always be something that students can use as a resource to just play around with the material and see what to expect on the exam content-wise.
Was that the first thing you started with?
It was, and it was the only thing for about 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so, single day since then, we've had a question. So we've got over 2,200 questions now, and we plan on continuing with that.
Have you developed the questions?
We write them ourselves. In some cases, we have a team that backs us, and in some cases, we'll have our team develop those. But we're always vetting them ourselves. So it's all based off of MCAT, official practice MCAT materials. And once you have a sense of what's on the syllabus plus how the exam is structured, then it becomes relatively straightforward about how to develop questions, what's an appropriate question for the exam and what's not.
Okay. So that's the MCAT question of the day. What about let's say, the live e-course?
So the live e-course, and I guess the Anytime e-course as well, I don't want to distinguish too much between them because our goals really there are the same.
Okay.
Our goal ultimately, and this aligns pretty well with students' goals, is that the students are going to do as well as they possibly can in the MCAT. And our philosophy behind that was that we didn't want to replace anything that students would otherwise do on their own. So we didn't want to replace what a textbook would do, and we didn't want to replace what even another course from another company might do, or really any other kind of studying. We wanted to add on to that something that was really unique. And that's why we wanted to take a strategy-based approach. So we wanted to say, all right, the students and us, we're going to come to the table, and our expectation is the students are at a place in their education where they've taken the prerequisite courses, they've had a background in the content. So our assumption is when students come to us, they know the content. The question and really the issue for the MCAT is that it's not a content game. It's a critical thinking game. It's an application game. And so what we wanted the course to be about was taking that content and distilling it into an MCAT-relevant context. So understanding how is this content going to show up on the exam, and not just what's testable, but what kind of concepts are really high yield, what kind of concepts are really focused on a lot, how do these writers write these questions, and why do they write them that way, and you know, what kind of insights can we get from that? So in that sense, it's very different from the rote, you know, going through a textbook and studying or just reviewing content. And it's also different from how a lot of other courses or companies structure their courses. So that's really our goal, is to teach students how to play this game of the MCAT and to be available as resources to them for coaching. And I think that the reason why I don't want to distinguish between the live course and the anytime course, the on-demand course, is really because we don't want that to be the distinguishing factor between whether students are successful or not. Our goal is that we're going to provide the support that students need no matter which program they choose. The difference between them is in the scheduling and the flexibility of the student. Some people just can't make certain hours every week for 8 weeks. Right. Some people need 10 weeks or 16 weeks to go through the material and pace themselves. And so we still wanted to have an option that would support them the way that they needed to be supported.
And that would be the recorded e-course, right?
That's right.
Okay. But the material covered in both courses is the same. It's just one is live and one is recorded, right?
That's right.
All right. And do students have the option to, I mean, are there like office hours, or do they have the option to email tutors? Or I know there's not phone support. At least that's what I recall.
Right. So that's really where that support outside of class time comes into play. Students have, for either version, have direct access to us outside of class time. So it's electronic access. They can do it in their student login. They can also just send us an email. And our commitment is to respond to all students within 24 hours. So we want to have a direct engagement with students, whether it's about the content, they're studying. You know, students often sometimes will hit a plateau after several weeks and then they don't know what to do next. That's what we're here for. So we see ourselves as coaches, mm-hmm. and that is an active process. It's a two-way engagement. And so we know that we have to be available to students outside of class time to accomplish that goal.
Okay. And what about QBank, which, as I understand it, provides subscription access to hundreds of MCAT questions and their answers. How does that fit?
Yeah. So it's now over 1,000 questions.
Wow.
It's something that we built and add to on a consistent basis, and over time, we just recently broke 1,000 questions. But that wasn't really a question. So the goal for the QBank is to give students as close as possible an experience to what the questions will be like on the exam. So the practice MCAT materials are, of course, the closest thing that you can get because they are the official materials. But students often can blow through those really quickly, and they are a bit on the pricey side, you know, $35 mm-hmm. per exam. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to do that in a way that was incredibly reliable and high quality, and also do that pretty affordably. And so students can get access to our entire database for quite a bit less than they would pay you know, for basically any other resource out there.
And I assume a lot of the QBank questions, if not all of them, are your MCAT questions of the day, or were at one time your MCAT questions of the day.
Actually, no. There's nothing in the QBank that overlap. Literally zero questions that overlap with a question of the day. So
oh,
the
wow.
question of the day is all discrete questions.
Mm-hmm.
There are we used to do some passage-based questions that we split up, but it's all supposed to be and designed as discrete questions.
Right.
QBank is all passage-based because that's where most of the MCAT is, and so we had to develop something that was really new, and use a different vetting process for that.
Got it. So you're not just repurposing content. I mean, you really
absolutely not.
Right. Okay. That's good to know. Now, if you're enrolled in the live course or the e-course, is QBank aimed more for people who are doing self-study entirely and not taking a course, or is it designed to supplement courses?
I think it covers everyone a little bit. I think
okay.
that basically anybody can benefit from it, even if they're planning on self-studying and, you know, they're pretty solid with the content. It's just a great way to see what to expect on the exam. It was initially pitched as a supplement to the course,
mm-hmm.
but we realized that there's really no reason to close it off.
Right.
And if the content is there, we want – our goal at MPrep is to make resources as accessible and affordable as possible. And so, you know, it aligned pretty well with our mission to make the QBank available to a broader audience who maybe don't necessarily want a course, but they can still get access to this practice.
What if, like, yesterday I got a call from someone who said she'd arrived in the United States from a non-English-speaking country, in elementary school. In her home, they spoke her native language. She speaks unaccented English, but she struggles with the verbal section of the MCAT. Or other people might struggle with the physical sciences sections, and some people might struggle with the bioscience section. Do you have something that is appropriate for people who are really just struggling with one area?
So I think there's a couple things to parse out there. Verbal is a very unique beast.
Yeah.
So maybe I should address the very last question first, which is,
okay.
do we have something that's really specialized for a particular student who's struggling with just a particular area? And the answer is no. Besides the QBank, which allows you to, and the question of the day as well, with the features of that product, they allow you to focus on a particular area. The course itself is a cohesive product. The content is designed and just integrated in such a way that it's not really conducive to splitting. I think that a second piece of that is around the sciences. We've actually had that request pretty frequently of students who say, you know, I'm great in the biological sciences. What I really want is physics help.
Right.
And that's fine. You know, I like when students have that level of self-awareness. What ends up often being the case is that those students who struggle in one particular section of the sciences will come into the course, will start working with us in physics, and then be like, wow, you know, I'm getting a whole new perspective on the MCAT as a whole. I want to stay in for the rest. And so I think it's a little bit ambitious for students who've been self-studying who may not have taken the MCAT before or have a really deep level of understanding about what to expect on the exam, to sort of write off other sections of the exam as not really worth their time studying. Even mm-hmm. if they've taken the exam and done well on them in the past, you know, let's say they got a 10 or 11 and they just want to focus on something else, that doesn't mean that they can't do better. And there's no reason for them not to do better. So I think that this is one of the reasons why we've kept it as a single cohesive product. To the question of verbal, though, as its own beast, you know, what we found is that largely there are students who will come into the course who will come to the verbal and for whom the verbal section makes no difference at all. they go into the MCAT and they get a 14 or a 13, some cases a 15. And, you know, when we ask them, you know, what is it that you did to get such a high score? There isn't anything that they can describe as a tool or as a method, you know, as a procedure that they did. What we find from those people is across the board, they are avid readers.
Right.
They're people who, for their entire lives, you know, it's not a chore for them. It's not a way of studying for the MCAT. They just love to read, and they've been doing it their entire lives. And so they've just had so much context for what the passages look like that they're ready for test day. And they're ready for test day before they come to us. Now, we can help hone those skills in terms of giving them a sense of what to expect in terms of the types of questions and some strategies. But by and large, these are people who are going to be successful anyway. So for the people who struggle with the verbal section, what I tell them all the time is the more runway you have, the better. Because what we're going to do is we're going to teach you to mimic those things that avid readers do. And so that's going to include studying on a daily basis, reading non-MCAT stuff. And you know, you're going to pick some literature, and you're going to read it every night. And if you want to see the results, then you're going to put in the work. So there are ways that students can overcome this, but we want students to recognize that, especially with verbal, preparing for that section is a marathon. It's not a sprint. There's no silver bullet for the verbal, unfortunately.
Well, as an avid reader, I've never taken the MCAT, but I guess I would do okay on that particular section.
I'm sure you do just fine.
Oh, I always have a book handy. Now, how does the with MPrep's focus on test strategy, and that's, you know, kind of your calling card, do you feel that applicants who have been away from the classroom for several years may benefit from a more content-oriented MCAT prep because they haven't looked at a chemistry or bio text in years? Or perhaps would they benefit from retaking a few basic science classes or reviewing some of those basic science texts?
So definitely, if students have been out of class long enough, then retaking some of those courses is great. You know, especially if med school might not even acknowledge their past coursework if it's been long enough. You know, I've worked with students who have been out of school for 15 years,
right,
and they have to retake their prerequisites.
Yeah.
But our, you know, to reiterate our mission, which is to provide accessible resources, I host info sessions relatively frequently.
Okay.
You know, these are basically sales pitches. Tell them a little bit about the course, what to expect on the MCAT. We do some practice. I want everyone to get value out of the session. But I tell everyone in the session the following. You do not need to spend $2,000 on a course if what you're missing is content knowledge. You don't have to come to our course either. Just save yourself the money. I'm all about saving money for students, because those students largely aren't going to get unique value out of taking an MCAT course that's going to review content. You can get that in a textbook for free in the library. Now, some people really, really want to have someone tangible to review the content with them,
right,
and then that's great. There's nothing wrong with these more content-oriented courses. Maybe even a private tutor would be more targeted and beneficial. So, you know, I think, again, a lot of that really depends on the person. But I am cautious about taking money from students who need that, because they don't necessarily need me. And I want to make sure that we're providing something that they can't get anywhere else. So, yes, I think that the students who need that content review would benefit from doing specifically content review.
Mm-hmm.
And often the students who come to us who wanted to take our course anyway and need a content review, I'll basically tell them that they can get themselves an MCAT prep book, again, for free in the library. It doesn't have to be the latest, greatest thing. And use that as a reference guide. Use the course to frame where they should study, where the high-yield information is, and then use the textbooks as a way to really dig in and bring up their content knowledge to the level where it needs to be. And so in that sense, I don't think that the course is ill-suited towards a particular group of students. And in fact, about a quarter to a third of our students are non-traditional in some sense. So we've worked with a ton of these kinds of students and helped them be successful as well. So there are ways to combine it all.
Now, I noticed on your site that you said the average score of your students is a 30 on the MCAT. Yeah. Do you notice, like, differences in terms of this average between non-traditional students, students who've been away from the classroom a bit, and obviously some of them could have been working in a lab and using, you know, scientific
right.
principles, so I'm not sure that's necessarily the best breakdown, but do you notice any such difference?
No, and I'm not sure that there's an intuitive way to justify why
yeah.
there would be.
Okay.
You know, I think it's arguable that non-traditional students could do better.
Sure.
Because they may have more experience.
I mean, if they've been a sim or they're working in a lab exactly. or, you know, yeah.
Exactly. And on the flip side, though, most people, when they get into their professional lives, are relatively specialized.
Mm-hmm.
So if you worked in a lab, you know, working on neurons, you'll know everything about the nervous system, but you might not know anything anymore about general chemistry and
right.
physics.
Right.
So there are two sides to that coin, but no, we aren't seeing differences, and I've seen some really, really stellar scores from non-traditional students and from, you know, the prototypical pre-meds. There hasn't been too much of a difference. The differences aren't so much in the background, but in what students are bringing to the table in terms of their commitment to really prepare and get the work done.
Okay, great. Applicant know how much time he or she should budget for the MCAT? I'm guessing it varies from individual to individual, but can you offer any suggestions for someone trying to plan? Over how many weeks should they, do you suggest students prepare?
Sure.
How many hours per week?
So as a hard cap, I don't like to see anybody preparing for the exam less than 2 months,
okay.
even if they are the strongest test takers and know the content, all the content, like the back of their hand.
So that's actually a minimum. It's not a cap, right?
Right. Sorry.
Yeah.
I should use a slightly different terminology for that. The bare minimum that
yeah.
they should use. There isn't really anything on the upper limit that I've seen. So I've had students come or take our course and then take 10 months after the course to study before taking the MCAT.
Wow.
And I've seen students, on the flip side, take the exam right away. So at the bare minimum, I want to see at least 8 weeks, but then that varies a lot by student. I like to see students also putting in 15 to 30 hours a week, and that's including class time. And that also, again, varies by student.
It's a significant commitment. Regardless.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a part-time job.
Students are serious. Definitely.
Yeah.
And I think that if students are serious about having a really solid score on their application, then they need to get serious about this exam. This exam ruins a lot of dreams.
Sure.
And it also makes a lot of dreams. And so students should not treat this flippantly.
Now, how much of a role does sheer practice, which presumably increases speed, how much of a role does that play in doing well on the MCAT?
I think that practice, that there's no way to really prepare for the exam that does not include practice.
Mm-hmm.
But while it's necessary, I don't necessarily think that it's sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
So students often, you know, do need to dive into more content review, just not necessarily practice-wise, but just learn the content that's on the exam.
Conceptually.
People often find, right, conceptually. Even math, for example. When students have a really hard time with math, you know, they haven't taken a math in a long time,
yeah.
I can tell they're struggling in physics, I don't tell them to go get an MCAT physics textbook. I tell them to go get a GRE, a GMAT, SAT, ACT, quantitative section.
Mm-hmm.
And practice up their math skills. So practice is absolutely one of the best things that students can do. But I'm very cautious when students or anybody advises people to say something like, oh, all you need is a practice AAMC MCAT exams and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
That advice is largely coming from people who probably would have done well anyway. And we don't know if they could have done better if they'd use a different approach.
Right.
So, you know, I go through those forums and I see that advice all the time. And I think that it's really important to take that advice with a grain of salt, because largely it's coming from people who don't have experience coaching others in being successful on a test, who don't necessarily have tutoring experience, who may have just taken the exam once, studied a little bit, and they have the assumption that whatever I did, everyone else should do, and they'll be fine too. And that's not the case. Everyone's going to learn a little bit differently. Everyone needs different support. And that's why it's really important, I think, to be careful about those kinds of blanket statements about you do X and everything will work out.
It's true. True. But how many students have used either your live course, your recorded course, since MPrep has been in existence?
So we worked with over 1,000 students to date.
Okay. All right, so you have a fair number there. Now, I interviewed the owner of a non-MCAT online test prep company a few weeks ago who likened his service to a gym membership. I kind of like the analogy. If you don't use it, it won't help. Do you or how do you help your students with self-discipline, especially those with the recorded course?
So I do get that request relatively frequently. I think that the people who go for courses like the on-demand course generally already know that they are self-motivated. You know, they're self-starters and they're going to make it happen.
Uh-huh.
Nonetheless, I do get that request even in the Anytime course. And you know, I think that I'm a firm believer that motivation comes from within, and I can facilitate that motivation, and I can be available as a resource to students. And I have a student right now who requested from me a couple weeks ago that I keep her on track, and I can send her emails. You know, I can follow up with her, but ultimately, if she's not going to respond, you know, if she's not going to put in the work, there's nothing I can do to force students.
Right.
And so I think that what I leave students with is the gravity of the exam, and that they really need, there's no way to see results, especially if, you know, they need to raise a weak score. There's really no way to see results unless they're going to put in the work. And I can do everything that in my power to make sure that we're going to provide the resources that they need. But if they don't come to the table ready for it, then it's going to be really hard to see those results.
Okay, that's 100% correct. Now, the MCAT is about to change big time. The last administration of the current exam will be in January 2015. Can you outline what's happening in spring 2015, and how is MPrep preparing for it?
So spring 2015, the MCAT, what's been codenamed MCAT 2015, is being released. The current MCAT is no longer going to be offered, although students who take the current MCAT will still have their scores reported through 2019. So students can get in on the current MCAT and still be safe for application for a number of years to come.
Right.
But in 2015, the exam's going to have an additional section. So that'll be the basically psychology and sociology section. They're removing some physics content, some chemistry content, organic chemistry, some biology content, but they're adding a lot more than they're removing in addition to the psychology sociology section. Students will be expected to have taken biochem, for example. So that's going to make a much bigger appearance on the new exam than it does on the current one. And the exam is going to be about 3 hours longer.
Whoa.
So
Ouch.
Overall,
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's woo. So how long will it be total in?
So it'll be over a seven-hour test day.
Woo.
It's going to take some stamina. Now, it's not all bad, because the AMC has been very generous with the extra time that they allow per question. So I think on the current MCAT, that's been a really big issue for a lot of students, is that they just can't finish, especially in verbal, that they just can't finish the section in time. So the MCAT is going to be much more generous with the timing. You're going to get between 20 and 40% more time per question. So there's slightly more questions on the overall section, but most of the extra time is from the new section and from the fact that they're just giving you more time to get through it. So it's not a completely linear increase in terms of the amount of content that you're going to have to work through.
Right.
So that's one thing about the new exam. Its focus is also going to be allegedly a little bit different. They're going to be more focused on things like experimental design, justification of data, and conclusions based off of those data. So more interpretive, I'd say perhaps more critical thinking. I think time will tell about the practical aspect of that and how much they really do focus on it compared to the current MCAT. It's a little bit hard to say without the full-length practice exam being released yet. So that's our anticipation. And the scoring scheme is going to be different as well. So it's still going to operate on a range of 15 points per section, but they've changed the range so that the average score, they hope, will be at 500. And then there's a 60-point range that's centered at 500.
So will it still be a 45-point scale, or is the whole scale changing? Because last I heard, it wasn't clear what they were doing. Or do you know yet? Is it out yet, what they're doing?
So they just came out with it, and I know it's what I described probably isn't that clear. The way that it works is it's going the total overall range will be from 472 to 528. So each of the four sections will be scored on a range from 118 to 132. And they, as much as they would like, are trying to focus on the top of what they call the top of the distribution curve. So they want to focus on the fact that a score of 500 out of the 528 is perfectly sufficient, is going to be an average score, and it's going to be perfectly sufficient for most students to be successful in medical school. So they're trying to actually de-emphasize the importance of the MCAT on the application, and a 500 is roughly going to correlate to, you know, the 50th percentile, which on the current MCAT is right around a 25, and their studies, you know, their research has indicated that students who score 25 are still capable of being successful in medical school. So they basically want to shift the focus away from the top 20% of test takers and say, look, basically if you get right within this threshold, then you're going to be fine in medical school, and we want med schools to not really focus as much on that score as they focus on the rest of your application.
Have they ever heard of U.S. News?
You know, I think that their goals are noble.
Yes.
And
yeah, agreed.
I will leave it at that. As for how practical they are, you know, that's not my business. My business is making sure that students do as well as possible, and medical schools will evaluate students however they choose to do so.
True. Okay. That was very interesting, because the last I had checked, the new scoring wasn't out. So there's going to be a complete – I assume there will be some kind of resource given to translate the new scores to the old scores, and et cetera.
Yeah, I was in a webinar with them, with the AMC recently, and they want to avoid that as much as possible. I think that schools and individuals are going to end up doing it. It's sort of one of those – empirical inevitabilities.
Yeah.
But the AMC is not going to do it, and they want to de-emphasize the correlation between the two exams because of the extra section and the different timing, and mm-hmm. You know, there are core fundamental differences between the
right.
exams.
Oh, they definitely are. Yeah. So they're really going in a radically new direction in terms of the scoring.
Right.
What are the implications for applicants planning to apply in summer 2015 or later? Who should rush to get in under the wire with the current shorter MCAT, more focused MCAT? And what courses must students have to benefit from your course and do well on the MCAT? All the medical school prerequisites or just some of them?
So I'll very quickly address the current MCAT because very, very soon that's not going to be an issue for us anymore.
Right.
I want to have students who have taken their prerequisites and at least have some background in physics, general chemistry, organic chemistry, and biology. You don't have to have taken physics 2. You don't have to take an orgo 2. They may help, but they're really not necessary for the MCAT. The more bio you've got, the better. Gen chem, you know, pretty much also at a relatively basic level. Things, courses like AP chemistry that students will take in high school are often more than sufficient for success on the MCAT. So, you know, the MCAT is really testing students on a relatively basic level of content knowledge, except when it comes to bio. That's where the extra experiences comes into play. For MCAT 2015, they'll need to have taken some psych and sociology and in addition to biochemistry. So even more bio is going to, you know, more advanced coursework in bio is going to be emphasized. Physics and gen chem and organic chemistry requirements are going to stay the same. So basically you're just going to have to do more, not different.
Right.
As for how that's going to affect applicants, we're recommending that students, all students, if they can, that they take the current MCAT.
Sure.
And that's for all the reasons that we outlined, plus the fact that as a new exam, there just aren't as many resources out there available for preparation. The current MCAT has 8 official practice exams. The new MCAT's only going to have 1. So,
yeah.
And it's not going to have another one until late the fall of 2015. So anyone who's taking the MCAT in 2015 is basically only going to have 1 official practice exam to study with. So we want as many people as possible to get it over with now.
Yeah.
The only circumstance in which I don't want to see students rushing it are if, A, they haven't taken their prerequisites and, you know, they just
won't get it done.
Ready.
Yeah.
Right. And if they've taken the exam before or, you know, if they've taken a couple practice exams and they know with absolute certainty that the timing is going to be a serious issue for them, because the new MCAT is going to be a lot more generous with timing, then, you know, especially those who can't get through the verbal section, they're going to benefit from just waiting it out, even having to know that extra content knowledge. So there are a couple benefits to waiting.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it seems like and of course the exam is just shorter. It's less arduous in that respect. I realize you get more time per question, but sitting and taking an exam for 7+ hours is.
Oh yeah, it's not going to be a walk in the park.
No, not at all. You have any last minute advice or tips for medical school applicants?
For applicants, I think that as much as it's not in my interest to say this to students, I think that it's really important to not stress out. Let me reframe that.
Okay.
I think it's really important for students to recognize that the MCAT is only one piece of a very big puzzle. You know, it's only one piece of who you are. And so don't come to the mindset that if I haven't scored X, it's game over for my dreams, and that I'm going to keep retaking the MCAT until I get a 32 or whatever. It's really important that, you know, as long as students have met some baseline score for the requirements for their application, I prefer to see students focus the rest of their time not on studying for the MCAT, but in doing the other things that are important for med school and for growth as an individual,
sure.
For making sure that med school is really what you want. You know, there are a lot of very unhappy people in medical school for a lot of reasons, and I think it's really important for students to be prepared for what kind of commitment that is for the rest of your life. Shadowing, volunteering, all those are important for med school and for you. And the MCAT's just one piece of that.
I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. Medical school is a major commitment. It's a major investment. And it really is absolutely critical that it's not only that you qualify, that applicants know it's the right path for them.
Right.
So I think that's a great bit of advice. Alec, this has been a highly informative segment. Thank you so much. Where can a listener learn more about MPrep and all the options it offers?
So for any of our services, students can come to MCATquestion.com.
MCATquestion.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you'll find everything you need there. You can contact us there, and we're always willing to and happy to chat with students.
Great. We'll throw a link in the show notes at info.exhibit.com/56 to MCATquestion.com and to the resources I mentioned earlier. Check them out. Again, you'll find the links at info.exhibit.com/56. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, our 56th episode. If you found this episode valuable, please share the good word. We have made it really easy for you to do so. Just go to info.exhibit.com/love. There is a pre-populated tweet that you can send to your Twitter followers or copy and paste it into a Facebook or LinkedIn update. Either any of those we'll appreciate. Thank you in advance. And if you have a question you would like answered or you want to provide feedback directly to me, please do so at info.exhibit.com/56. There's a comment box there. There's also a mic, a graphic of a mic. And if you use that mic, you can send me an audio message or question. You can also just send me an email to questions@accepted.com. Again, that's questions@accepted.com. Finally, if you're not yet a subscriber to Admission Straight Talk, you can subscribe either through iTunes, Stitcher, or Zoom. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.